Good Sunday morning, Jacksonville, and welcome to the latest edition of Hard Worka with Pete, the job guy Langlois. And as you guys know by now, you tune in on Sundays to get free, extensive career advice, as well as insight on the latest employment trends from the staffing industry's leading authority. That's the man sitting in front of me, Pete, the job guy Langlois. And Pete has over 30 years of experience in staffing, and we want to invite you to join the discussion with this honest and entertaining filter. And again, just because we're here every Sunday morning, we're up early, doesn't mean you have to be. If you can't make it every Sunday, if you can't catch every Sunday show, you can always tune in to PeteTheJobGuy.com, and that's a website where you can access this show and more content. And if you're a reader, that's also where we'll provide a transcript of today's show. If you have any questions at all, his email address is Pete@PeteTheJobGuy.com. How you doing, Pete?
Good morning, all you hard workers. I hope you're having a great Sunday. You just got up, you shook off the cobwebs, you put the dog out, you had your coffee, and you made a great decision. You're joining me, Pete the Job Guy, on Hard Worker, and I'm glad you're here. Now, one thing we do, and I ask you every week, to make sure you take some notes. Whether, you know, if you're real tech savvy and you got some kind of a tech notepad or you're using your phone, you go ahead and you got your thumbs working and you're taking some good notes. Or if you got a pad and paper and you're old school like me, you're just jotting down some things. What I want you to jot down is something that you plan to do differently as a result of the time you spend listening to the show this Sunday. Because we get some great career advice, we have leadership tips, we have guests that are going to tell us some of the things, maybe some of the failures and pitfalls that they've had in their career, and you listen to what they've done, and what you can do is try to benefit from their hindsight and their stories, and you put together a plan to help you not fall into those little pits or the potholes, and you have a better experience with your life, and that's what this is about. We try to help the workforce of today and tomorrow. So one thing I want to tell you about today, and I want to tell you about some of the bad bosses that I've had, okay? Not to go busting on these people and saying, oh, they were horrible. But if we hear the specifics, some of the things that they've done and some of the decisions that they've made and how it impacted me and how I felt, either some of you can commiserate. Some of you are that boss, and you might see some of the traits or hear some of the traits that you exhibit from day to day, and you'll have an opportunity to change them. But I want to tell you a funny story about, and I'll go back to my Navy days. Now, in the Navy, I had some you know, winner bosses. We'll just call them winners. You know, I had some really good ones, but I've had some bad ones. And you know what? That's not unlike the private sector as well. You know, you guys have probably had a bad boss or two in your career journey. And again, some of you might be that bad boss, and we can correct some of that behavior. But I had this one petty officer that I reported to, and he wasn't a very good communicator, and he had all kinds of things he had us do. But one thing I just could never figure out. See, I worked the flight deck at night on an aircraft carrier. And we had what we call wands. A wand is a flashlight, but at the end of it, there's a plastic tube. And we would put a colored lens. We'd unscrew this plastic tube and put a colored lens on the outside of the regular flashlight lens. And it would light up that, illuminate that wand in a particular color. So when the pilots land on the aircraft carrier, depending on the color of the wand, they know who we are and what our function is up on the flight deck. So if, let's say, yellow wands, they know that's going to be the flight deck director. That he's going to tell me, I'm going to look for my yellow wands to tell me where to park this airplane. And then the folks with the blue wands will come by and chain it down. And the red wands are the people that handle the ordnance and so on and so forth. The color of the wand kind of lets the pilot know what your job responsibility is on the flight deck. And also, by having these wands, we're not shining bright lights in the pilot's eyes, okay? But this one petty officer, my boss, he would tell us at the end of the shift, when all flight operations ceased, he had us unscrew the plastic nozzle at the end of each flashlight and remove the colored lens. And then re-screw it back on, and we'd all have to put the colored lenses on the side. And I'd say, And I said, you know, why on earth are we removing these every night only to put them back in when we get in the next day? When the night flight operations begin, we'd have to put the lenses back in and screw them in. Why are we taking these out? It makes no sense. And he said, because if you leave the lenses in, it's going to wear out the batteries faster. And he had his colorful version of English that was smattered with some profanities and stuff. It was a long time ago, guys. We're talking about, you know, 30 years ago. So, and, you know, I was like, well, there's no logic to that. Number one, when you turn the flashlights off, there's no longer a draw on the batteries. It's not going to do anything. And number two, you know, even if the battery's on, if the flashlight is turned on, it can't wear out the batteries any faster to have a colored lens in there, because there's no brain in the battery that says, oh, gosh, hey, other battery, hey, listen, we're going to have to work way harder right now. We're going to have to produce more energy to get through that colored lens and be nice and bright. So let's work extra hard. We're going to burn up quicker, but we're going to have to work harder. Okay? Batteries don't have that kind of brain. It doesn't work like that. But he would not listen to logic. He was not going to be told. We went to him more than once and said, hey, you know what? This defies logic. Doesn't make any sense. Why are we taking the lenses out? You know, it takes time and energy to do this every day, and time's money and all this stuff. And he just wouldn't have it. And he thought we were being insubordinate. And he gave us a direct order to remove those lenses. And we did that, and we did it each and every day. Now, that might not seem like much, because listen, if I grab the flashlight, and you got probably a dozen people doing it every day, we grab our wands, we take the thing off, unscrew it, put it in a spot that we're not going to lose it, screw it back in, put it up. Okay, it doesn't sound like that, like that big of an event. But if you take those man hours associated with doing it, doing that task, and run it out over a two-year period, and then you think it had zero effect on the batteries. Nothing. No effect. But we had to do it because he made us do it. He was not going to listen to any of us try to reason with him and explain that it had no bearing because it was his way or the highway. And that's, you know, one example of a boss that just was unaware and also unwilling to accept any kind of feedback. If you remember our leadership tip from Coach Larry last week, Larry told us as leaders, when we have performance reviews with our subordinate or our staff, we ask them for feedback. What can I do better as a leader? Without being defensive in any way, if there was one thing you could change about me, what would that be to help me be a better leader for you? Yeah, that's what it takes. You know, I had another leader, and I'll give you an example of a good leader I had in the Navy, too. And this is Vinny Jackson, Vincent Jackson, Vinny. He came he was a big, big, scary man. When you saw him, he just came in, and he, like a ball of thunder, comes in, and he says, I'm going to let you guys know something. I am a blank. And the blank, you can insert what you would call somebody if they cut you off in traffic and say, oh, he's a, you know, look what that did to me. Okay. He said, I want you to know this is what I am. And I'm going to show all each and every one of you, if you ever color outside the lines or do something different than what my directive is, you're going to find out. And some of you are going to find out real quick why I am this way. Some of you, it might take a while, but I'm going to prove to every single one of you, if you step outside the lines and even curve just a little bit away from my directives, you're going to find out what it's like and what I'm like. And he meant it. But I'll tell you what, he was so consistent. I mean, if you're 1 minute late, you might as well have not shown up for work. He was so, so consistent. He hammered you, and his punishment was swift and strong, and he was scary. But man, I'll tell you what, after about 2 or 3 weeks of that, even the most foolish people that were challenging, boy, they were high-stepping. Everybody was in line. But what I also found out, a couple of things about him. If you tried your hardest, and even if you weren't quite there, he'd work with you. He would work with you. And he wasn't the type of guy that gave you all kinds of roses and sunshine and compliments. Sometimes it was just a smirk or a nod to let you know that you were doing all right. And that guy did so much for me, and he inspired me and motivated me, but he also helped me with my military bearing and made sure that I was the soldier that I was capable of being. Vinnie Jackson, I salute you. And I'll tell you what, when that guy showed up in his dress uniform, I don't know how he could stand up straight, because he had more metal on the front of his chest than anybody I've ever seen. Okay? Before he joined the Navy, and he retired from the Navy, he had spent 20 years in the Army. And he was in Vietnam, and he saw wartime. And if he was ever shirtless or in a pair of shorts, you could see how he earned those purple hearts that he had. Vinnie Jackson did a lot for me. There's an example of a good boss and a bad boss. And I think the consistency of the good boss, even though they can be harsh and demanding, the consistency was there. And it was inspirational. And it was fantastic. Today, guys, with me, as always, is the world-famous Aaron Mills. Aaron, good morning.
Ooh, I'm here.
Aaron, now, in your... So your incredibly long career that you've had, I'm sure you've had some good bosses and bad bosses, and we don't want to get into specifics, but you think of a good boss that you've had, what is or are some of the traits that you've seen? Because I want to know, good boss, bad boss, from a good boss, what are some of the traits that you've seen this person exhibit?
Okay, I just want the world to realize that this is a setup question. I'm going to lose either way. I'm just kidding.
Well, take me out of the equation.
Yeah, no, I think good bosses, I feel like every boss that I've had definitely has good traits, and I think...
They have good crates?
Crates.
Yeah, they have wonderful crates, but go ahead.
It's because I'm thinking about my container home.
Yeah. By the way, Aaron has said this before. She wants to live in a container home. You ever go on HGTV and you get one of these big rail cars? She wants to get one of these rail cars, or like two or three of them, mm-hmm. and convert it into some like little rail car compound that you're going to have and do it, and I keep telling her that's an incredibly bad idea. But go ahead. Your bosses have crates.
They have crates. They have traits that I think, some good ones I think would be, I do enjoy criticism, and they always prep me before and tell me, you know, this doesn't make you a bad person, or this doesn't affect your work style, but, you know, I think you can do better at this.
All right.
Or they say that, look, I have faith in you, and they instill something like they believe in me and that they trust me to do what I'm going to do to make sure that I'm doing my job as best as I can. So I would say any of my bosses that have done that and said, like, look, I completely trust what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Even when I think that I can't do it, I have a lot of self-doubt. I think them just saying, like, I have faith in you pushes me a long way.
You know, I would say that works for everybody. Anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
Think about that. When I look at the leaders that I've had, mm-hmm. they believe in you to some degree. And they let you stumble and fall here and there.
Yeah.
And if you stumble and fall, they'll let you know about it. Mm-hmm. But they give you either the creative freedom, or they let you kind of evolve into your own person within mm-hmm. your job. And as long as you perform the essential functions of the job, you get those done. Sometimes how you get it done, you know, you might have your own personal flair, and they let you do that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's good. But, okay, now, you might have had a bad boss. And, you know, what are some of the traits something or one specific one that you've seen your bad boss exhibit that made you, you know, turned you off a little bit for whatever reason?
So, at a young age, I've been taught to never speak badly about anyone. So this is... World, don't take this as me speaking badly.
Do it. Speak badly about this person.
And this is where you say and instead of but. And I would think that a trait that I would tell a boss to improve on would be, oh gosh, see, I can't do this. I can't do constructive criticism, which is why I'm not a boss. But I think...
Remember Larry said last week, and I love it. Coach Larry told us, you know, your boss stands there in front of you and says, Aaron... And you think of that boss, and mm-hmm. if that person stood in front of you and said, Aaron, I want to be a better boss. I want to do a better job and help motivate, inspire you, help you to do better. Mm-hmm. What can I change about me to help you?
Yeah. I think as anybody else thinks, as far as it comes to personal lives and your work lives, obviously there's a good balance, but I think a lot of my past boss, maybe their personal lives have entreaded on... Is that a word?
Entreaded?
Impeded.
No, impeded. Yeah.
Treaded on my personal life, and I don't know if I like that too much. You know, I want to be able to perform as best as I can in the work environment and then keep personal lives separate. And if we are friends outside of that work life, I feel like that would be just a different dynamic.
You
know, I don't know.
That's one. You know, and it's interesting because I know and I've seen a lot because I've been around a while and I've had managers, and I talked about good some bad managers and good managers that I've had before. And I had this one that was off base.
Uh-oh.
And as a regional vice president, this person's responsibility was to come into my office, right? Prior to coming into my office, they would look at all the financial statements and, you know, look at some of the performance of all the individual players in the office. And then when they come to my office, they sit, observe, and then by the time they leave, maybe 3 or 4 days later, they will give some very specific things that we can do to tweak and improve our performance. It's like kind of like a tune-up. Let me evaluate everything, look at everything, watch people in action, and then leave with some very specific action items. And then when that person would come back maybe 30 or 45 days later, we will have implemented all the strategies and all the things that he gave us to do so that we'll be better when he comes back and he'll see if we're on track. But this boss also wanted, you know, if we'd find some way to reward us, you know, like we're going to, you know, I want to take everybody to happy hour. He would find one specific element that we're doing right and say, oh, because you guys did this, I'm going to take everybody to happy hour. I'm going to do this. Now, for some people, you know, we have lives. We have kids. Yay. We have busy. Happy hour is just an extension of your day that's already busy and long. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time with my work family. I'd rather take that time. You want to give me a reward? Let me go home earlier or spend more time with
it's
my
so
family.
True.
But he thought it was a way to reward us and then give them a little FaceTime. You know, like the staff might want to, you know, they're trying to ascend the ranks. Let me, you know, talk to my RVP and let them know, get to know me a little bit better. But what happened was this individual would come and, you know, imbibe, start drinking with the group and get a little bit more relaxed and, you know, people start talking. I duck out. Now, one thing that everybody that works for me knows is I've run the company for 9 years. I'd show up. I never had a drink with a single manager or anybody else. And I always say, if I'm going to go on a business meeting with someone of the opposite sex, that's called a date. Okay. And that's just the way I've never crossed that line. I've never been accused of anything inappropriate because I take myself 100% out of any he said, she said situation or a he said, he said. It doesn't matter. It's not going to happen. I'm very careful about that. And I don't, you know, I always think alcohol is that great relaxer. And if you have problems, your problems are just heightened because the spotlight's going to shine on it. Well, this individual had a problem.
Oh.
And he came to our office and he crossed the line with more than one of the females in my office once. And we found out later, I didn't know all this because I went home. I didn't stay for long. I didn't drink.
Yeah.
You know, my whole thing is I'd always get a ginger ale with a lime in it. So everybody thinks I'm drinking it. I'm part of it. You know, I'm real
smart.
Social and I'm just staying on my A game, always on the A game.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, after about 5 visits, I realized he was batting about 3 for 5 with my staff, okay, which is no bueno. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to tell you this. When you talk about a bad boss, someone that's coming here to represent corporate, to show us the way and how to be better and more effective and productive, and yet he's just trampling all over what the right thing to do is, and then to think that he's taking that show on the road, right? He's going to go to another office. He's a married individual, too. So, I mean, this to me was the worst example. But that story is written countless times all over the United States. Happens all the time. It's a terrible, terrible story. But that's just an example of, to me, it's like you keep yourself out of scenarios that you shouldn't be in.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And you know, and if you see something starting to unfold, get out of there.
Yeah.
There's no reason to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And just be careful, right? I don't know if you've ever seen anything like that, but my gosh, that just turns my stomach thinking of this individual who was summarily dismissed. You know, he was fired for inappropriate behavior.
Good riddance.
That's what I say. Aaron, let's talk about the show. What are we doing today?
So today we're having our best of, and we're going to talk about how awesome our guests are and how awesome, you know, we are. Yeah. Essentially.
Yeah, we are pretty awesome. Now, we have had some great guests, and our guests always share with us a number of different things. They tell us about their own personal career journeys. They tell us about the great companies that they work for, open positions that they have with their companies. But they, you know, some of the career advice and things they say are just absolute gems.
Yeah.
And periodically, Aaron and I sit back and we listen to them and say, you know what, we need to do a show where we just kind of combine little elements of all the different guests that we've had. And today you guys are fortunate enough that we're gonna give you a little bit of a compilation of some of the what we believe is some of the best tips that we've had from our guests. And Aaron, who kind of sticks out? Which one you want to hear first?
Yeah, I would say that Laura Nolan from Humana has one of my favorite advice to actually an employer instead of our advice to, you know, our candidates.
She was fantastic. Yeah. And we were cracking up the whole time she was in here. And she had great, great advice. And I know she said something about having a wellness program, no matter what, to employers. She said, for employers, you should have this in place because it'll help you attract and retain workers and bring them in. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll look for more. They're looking for a key differentiator right now. You know what? Let's roll that one.
No, I would just say, you know, there's with wellness, each and every employer should consider it. There's nothing wrong, right? Even if they don't have the funds or the budgets to purchase, you know, a high-tech wellness program for their employees. Anything that you can do to think outside of the box. And that next generation, Pete, I know as you're recruiting them, a lot of people are recruiting this next generation. They're actually really looking to be more flexible and agile. That's their number one benefit that they're looking for. And so wellness is a key part of that, right? And so that's what I think, you know, employers and then those that are out there interviewing, stick with it because it's not always going to be easy at your first job or second job, but have that grit and kind of keep working at it. And you might fail, but, you know, start up again and do it over and just stick with it long term.
That was a good one. Laura was a super, super guest.
Yeah, and if anybody that's listening wants to listen to that on our podcast, you can find it on iTunes or at PeteTheJobGuy.com.
Great. And now is a perfect time to go to Leadership Lessons with Coach Larry.
Thank you, Pete. Now, today I'm going to talk about the feedback sandwich. Now, I know you love a good sandwich as much as I do. However, as leaders, we need to put down that feedback sandwich. So what's a feedback sandwich? Well, a feedback sandwich is when you tell that person that you're giving feedback to something positive, then you follow it up with something negative or constructive, and then you follow that up with something positive. That's where it got its name, the feedback sandwich. And managers love the sandwich because it makes them feel more comfortable in giving that feedback. You know, I'm going to tell them something nice, something positive, so that they'll listen to that something negative. And then I don't want them to feel demotivated, so I'll tell them something positive at the end. But the issue with that is, while it's easier for leaders to give the feedback, it leaves the feedback receiver confused. Some people only hear the positive stuff. Some people only hear the negative stuff. And over time, this also tends to erode trust in the relationship. And here's why. You know, I was doing a workshop for leaders, and we were talking about feedback. And this leader said to me, she said, you know, whenever my manager comes up to me and tells me something positive, I want to run away because I always know that there's a but coming my way. I'm like, a but? She's like, yeah, there's always a but. Tell me more. And she says, you know, he'll tell you something positive, but then he'll say, but, and then tell you something constructive. I don't know about you. Well, most people want you to be direct and straightforward with them when giving you feedback. So don't put all that other stuff in there. So I'm going to ask you to put down that sandwich and think about feedback more like a relationship bank account. So whenever you give a positive piece of feedback, let's say to a direct report, that's a deposit. And when you do a piece of constructive feedback, that's a withdrawal. But here's the thing. Your deposits don't equal the same amount as a withdrawal. And here's why. The University of Michigan did a study on what does balanced feedbacks feel like? What's the ratio of positive to negative feedback that feels balanced? And in this study, they found that for every 6 pieces of positive feedback, you can give one piece of constructive or negative feedback, and that feels balanced to an individual. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to sit you down and give you 6 positive pieces of positive feedback and then 1 piece of constructive feedback. I mean, that's silly. But think about it over time. Think about the relationship, and also think about this bank account. So if I've made 6 deposits into your bank account, I can make that 1 withdrawal. So think about the people in your life, your direct reports, and what does that bank account look like? Have you made enough deposits in order to give that piece of constructive feedback and make that withdrawal? So one other thing I'd like to mention to all your listeners is, if you have a leadership issue, a management issue that you want me to discuss on the weekly program, one of the ways you can reach me is through LinkedIn. Just search for Larry O'Brien, and my company name is Mendoza and O'Brien, and feel free to connect with me. I'd love to connect with you, and we could communicate through LinkedIn. Also, you can go to my webpage, mendozaandobrien.com, and click on Contact Us and submit your question or your concern or your topic that you'd like to talk about. So again, put down that sandwich, think about the relationship bank account, and please let us know how it goes. Thank you, Pete. Back to you.
Nice work, Larry. And that music signifies that it's time to get a news and weather update. Welcome back, all you hard workers, and I hope you're having a great Sunday. And today we're having a best of show. Aaron and I are here. We're going to listen to some of the best clips from our guests that we've had. I want to remind everybody that I am Pete the Job Guy. And what Pete the Job Guy does, I'm a professional recruiter, and I'm surrounded by people that are better, faster, and smarter than me that recruit nationally for any jobs you're looking to fill, or if you're a candidate or a job seeker or even a passive seeker and you want to hear about different opportunities, you reach out to me. You just send me your resume or drop me an email at pete@petethejobguy.com, and I'll make sure we get back in touch with you. It'll either be me or one of our professional staff. We place professional folks in technology positions, accounting positions, general office, administrative, clerical. We have S&I Energy that places O&G and other energy type folks up and down the supply chain with energy. And we also have a banking division that specializes in placing banking folks. We're happy to help. And each one of our divisions only places people within that specialty. And I'll talk specifically about technology. Now, my technology division places folks either on a permanent direct hire basis, or on a project basis, or on a contract to hire basis. The folks that they place do all things technology. Okay, we don't specialize in any one technology. So we have folks that on my team are more dedicated to infrastructure, and others that are in the application development space. Some are in the big data space, etc. And what we do is that whole team only places technology professionals every day, meaning they don't place nurses one day, clerical folks the other day, and then light industrial another, and then they dabble in technology. It's not what they do. They're specialty providers. And think about this. When you do the same thing over and over, and you swim in a very narrow channel doing the same things over and over, you become an expert at it. And my team of technology recruiters and placement staffing professionals are the best in the business. Ben runs our team here in Jacksonville. He's been in the business about 15 years. He knows technology inside and out, so you're not going to stump him. He can talk your language, and that's good to know. He's not a shoe shine and a handshake. He's a technologist that just happens to be in staffing and recruiting and placement. So, and each division is like that. We have accountants that place accountants, you know, techies that place techies and so forth. That's what we do. We're at SNI Companies here in Jacksonville. Our telephone number is 904-713-2550. You can reach out to us that way or at pete@petethejobguy.com. Now, in this segment here, The next person that we want to hear from, do you remember, Aaron, when Lloyd Curicelli was on? And Lloyd and I go way, way back. We went to high school, and he's had a very distinguished military career. He's moved on as a program manager, project manager. He's a martial artist, he's a unique and talented individual. But Lloyd said some things about work-life balance. Do you remember? And we're going to play his segment, but didn't that resonate with the both of us?
Oh, yeah. I liked when he had his advice about work-life balance, and he says, I'm a strong believer in you cannot just work yourself to death. Nobody ever dies saying that I spent more time at work.
Oh, you know what?
It's so true.
Let's hear it come right out of his own mouth. Okay. Let's hear. This is from Lloyd Curicelli.
The one thing I wanted to say, Pete, about that is even with all the hours I work and my long commute and things like that, I find time for balance in my life. And you've heard about the writing and the music and the karate, and those are really just part of my balance, right? Along with my family. I'm a strong believer in you cannot just work yourself to death. All right. Nobody ever dies saying, I wish I spent more time at work. Right. It's I wish I spent more time fishing or golfing, or I spent more time with my grandkids or my kids, or pursuing my hobbies, or I wish I had taken karate and now I'm 90 years old and it's maybe it's never too late, but on your deathbed it's too late. So, and I really work hard in mentoring my workforce on you got to have that balance. Your career is important, but you know what? Your family, your well-being, your mental well-being. The work is going to be there long after I'm gone, long after you're gone. So give that your 110% every day. But, you got to have that other part of you that you're able to look back on your life and say, look at all the things I did, or all the contributions I made to society, not just all the money that I made at work. So I'm a big proponent of that, Pete.
That was really well said by Lloyd.
Yeah.
And it's the balance. He lives it. It's great advice for all of us to live it. You know what? I think now is the perfect time to go to the world famous Aaron Mills with Jack's Facts.
Woo-hoo. I'm Aaron Mills, and this is your Jack's Facts. Local chocolate shop Peterbrook Chocolatier was named after the owner's two children, Peter and Brooke.
Peter and Chocolatier.
Good name, don't you think? And I'm Aaron Mills, and that was your Jack's Facts.
Oh, wow, that was a brief one. Woo! Aaron, that was good.
Just trying to cut my time in half, Pete.
Oh, that's great. Okay, and you know what? Now's a good time to hear Aaron sing. Go ahead, Aaron, sing a song.
Meow, meow, meow.
Okay. That's not going to happen. But you know, another guest that we had was John Powell. And we always ask guests to tell us a bit about their career journeys. And, what would you tell your younger self? Do you remember that?
That was a really good answer. He spent a lot of time in reflection, and I hope to get to that level that day.
You're in a silly mood. All right, let's listen to John Powell. John, love hearing people's career journeys. Mm-hmm. What would you tell your 20-year-old self right now?
That's a good question. So I've actually thought about that a number of times. And, I don't necessarily regret the steps that I take, right? Mm-hmm. So, becoming a personal assistant to learn the foundations of digital marketing because I was kind of nervous about it. Like, I don't regret doing that. Mm-hmm. I don't regret some people thought that was not smart, but it was very smart. The thing that I wish I would have paid more attention to is not just the work that I'm doing, but the people that I'm working with. Mm-hmm. So for example, I spend so much time trying to decode people externally, like why do they buy, why do they give? But I didn't spend enough time decoding how my coworkers work and how I can best work with them.
Wow.
And so it's a really kind of a humbling lesson.
Yeah.
And I look back and I said, you know what, if there's anything I could tell my 20-year-old self is, the choices, it's fine, but spend more time optimizing how you work with people so you can get the very most out of each opportunity and everybody can benefit. It's a good lesson, and that's kind of why I still do the whole taekwondo thing is because that gives me a chance to get that lesson to kids before they,
that's awesome.
Learn it the hard way.
Right. John, we say, every week we try to dispense advice that's going to help people in their careers, because your career is our journey. It's mm-hmm. not really a destination. You know, it's a journey, and it evolves. And sometimes you have the best laid out plans, and life comes in and scrambles it like an egg, and you have to go in a whole new direction. That's part of life. But I love it when people get introspective, you know, mm-hmm. and we're the sum total of our life's experiences right now. Okay, and it's nice to say, you know, if I did more of this or less of this, and that's the benefit of hindsight. Back in the day when you're living it, you're going fast and furious, just trying to do the best you can. It's nice to have the wisdom of age and experience, even though you're a relatively young man. You can look back and say, you know, a little bit more of this, a little bit less of this. We can't change it, nor would we want to change our mm-hmm. our coding right now. This is who we are. But when we tell others, especially young people entering the workforce, mm-hmm. that this is what I, John Powell, or I, Pete Langlois, or I, Aaron Mills, wish I did a little more of and a little less of, it's helping people steer their own personal ship on their journey. Mm-hmm. So that's great. And John's whole podcast, like you said earlier, Aaron, mm-hmm. all of our podcasts are up on PeteTheJobGuy.com.
Yeah. That's right. So you can find all of these podcasts and more, transcripts, quotes on our social media, on PeteTheJobGuy.com, and on iTunes and Google Play.
Okay, great. And John's was a great one. Another good one and some great advice was from Kim Sessions. She's a well-known realtor in town. She's she's the crown princess of real estate in Jacksonville. She sold me my home. She did a wonderful job. And I know you're kind of embarking on a journey, and you made your list of Kim's tips, right?
Yeah, Kim's tips were super helpful. We went ahead and did, you know, there are 5 things to do before you start looking for a home. Look for that pre-approval, start shopping around within your budget, and then asking those questions once you get to
Kim's educating people. Yeah. One thing, a good takeaway here, and I think the segment that I want to play of Kim's is I mentioned to her that I went to sell a house through for sale by owner. I didn't call a realtor. I didn't call Kim Sessions. This is many years ago. And it was tough. And I told her some of the shortcomings, and I asked her, you know, what about for sale by owner? Mm-hmm. And let's roll with some of the things she said.
So we're actually seeing more for sale by owners right now because we are in a great market. But it's not as easy as it is. There's a system in place, and there are strong statistics that show that you are leaving probably money on the table by not listing with a professional that does this on a daily basis. You are also putting yourself in a safety situation. We are in one of the most dangerous occupations. We have to really pay attention. We have to field out people and really try to qualify them before we even meet them, because I am putting myself in big jeopardy meeting a stranger. So the safety is a huge factor. Time. I mean, you're taking a lot of time. You have to leave work to go open the house up. Buyers, I mean, when they want to see a house, they want to see a house. So not all of them are going to want to see it from 7 to 9 on the evenings or on the weekends. So you really want to strategize your house to be available at all times.
Yeah, and I can tell you from firsthand, that was the biggest problem. Because look, home buyers are hard workers, like all of us, right? Mm-hmm. And when are they going to come out to see it? Mm-hmm. They're going to see it around their non-work hours. Mm-hmm. I had to take time off of work. Or at night, I'm tired, and I'm showing house, or it's the weekend, I'm showing. It didn't work into my schedule to have mm-hmm. 2 jobs. Selling mm-hmm. a house became a full-time job, and weeding out the kooks. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't mean to be ugly, but there's kooks out there. And
well,
I had to.
Well, I'm sure your phone was also ringing with agents to try to take your listing.
I did.
I
did, and I eventually called one because I was frustrated, and I wished I had done it sooner because my house sold about 30 days later. And that was great advice from Kim. And like we said, you had your pen and pencil there, and you took notes, careful notes, and it's helping you right now. So Kim was great, and she nailed it with the for sale by owner stuff. And mm-hmm. man, that was a headache for me. Next up, Katie and Carly from NLP Logic. Oh my gosh, we were another group that we're always cracking up.
Exactly.
But man, we were cracking up with them. They said some things in there that said to me, one of my key takeaways is mathematics. You have more career opportunities mm-hmm. than what you did before. If you had an advanced degree in mathematics, you were either going to be a math teacher or an actuary, maybe at an insurance company yeah. or something. And now, hey, guess what? Math and statistics are sexy, and there's all these different job opportunities now. And I asked them, what would you tell your 20-year-old self, you know, in your career journey, you know, to avoid maybe some of the hiccups that you yeah. had? And let's hear what they had to say.
So I actually went to college straight out of high school, and I was working as a cook while I was there, and I loved cooking. And I dropped out of the University of Florida to spend a couple of years cooking. And I might tell 19 or 20-year-old Katie not to do that.
Very good.
I ended up back on the same path that I was originally on, so that was a pretty big detour.
Well, you know what's neat? There's nothing like hindsight, because you can always look back and say, oh, I shouldn't have done this, or I do more of this or less of this. But the greatest thing is by you sharing that story. If someone right now is contemplating going down a different path, maybe do it later, but finish the degree.
Right.
Go ahead.
It was a lot more fiscally responsible right. to do math for work and cooking for fun instead right. of the other way.
Very good. And Carly, what would you tell your 19, maybe 20-year-old self?
I would say to follow your passions. When I was in undergraduate, as I said, I was pursuing a degree in engineering because at the time I thought, well, what can somebody do with mathematics?
Yeah,
I knew that I loved it, but I thought I can't get a real job. You know, I didn't think I wanted to teach, and that was the only thing I thought was a career path in mathematics. Little did I know that there's all this amazing fun stuff that you can do. So that set me back a little bit in that I had to switch over to mathematics after my undergraduate degree. So just follow your passions. Trust your gut on what you enjoy doing.
And just listening to that segment, Aaron, that kind of puts a smile on my face, because those two were just like a big ball of energy.
Oh, they are three standard deviations away from the norm.
Oh, more statistic puns that she brought in. And oh, good gosh, what are you doing to us, Aaron? But Katie and Carly, they were fantastic. And mm-hmm. I really enjoyed having them on. Another guest that we had, too, was Chris Chula from We Culture.
That's right.
And boy, he had a wealth of information talking about working relationships, and he had some great advice. And I remember one thing that really kind of stuck with me. I asked him, what's changed? What's changed nowadays about how in the workforce, how people engage each other? Mm-hmm. And his reply was spot on. Let's go ahead and roll Chris Chula.
Well, Pete, you know, our generation, right, we were told by our parents, you know, hard worker, right?
Right.
Go to work for a big company, be quiet, do as you're told, climb the corporate ladder, right?
And then maybe one day we can work our way up into middle management. Don't make any waves, just go out there, hard work, keep your nose to the grindstone, and one day I can go out and be a middle manager somewhere and, you know, maybe do okay, right?
Absolutely, but things have changed. Now millennials are coming into the workforce, and the way they're motivated is different. Their value set is to be part of the greater good, the success of the team, a little bit more collectivism, right? So if their motivation has changed, I find that a lot of leaders from our generation say that they don't get it, and it's just the exact opposite. The people who are saying that millennials don't get it are wrong. What we have to do is adapt our management styles and how we lead to address their concerns. They're going to be the majority of the workforce by 2020. So we have to find ways to inspire and motivate them to get the best talent that they have available. The very talented, intelligent, and hardworking people. We just have to find a way to tap into the talent and motivate them, and that's what We Culture is all about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, you're preaching to the choir right now, I'm telling you, because this is exactly, I mean, these are the things that, you know, running a business like I do and like some other people, these are the challenges that I face every day. And I know the listeners, everybody that's listening to this program right now, whatever your station is in the workforce, you're relating to what Chris is saying, because he's telling your story. Chris, how does We Culture help organizations drive results?
It's really about getting people focused on everyday behaviors that help each other win, right? And it's about peer-level accountability to the core values. Once you have that mindset in place, and people are all working in the same direction towards that common goal, there's really not a lot that can't be accomplished, right? Think of all the impossible things throughout history that happened because people focused on the common goal
and then just did the test to get there. Like 100 years ago, 150 years ago, if we said we could fly, we probably would have been, you know, burned at the stake. But now we hop on an airplane like it's a city bus every day. We look down at our iPhones, don't even think about it.
Right.
That's because two people thought they can, and they sat there and laid it out and did the test and solved the little problems along the way that got them to that common goal.
That is all spot on. It's funny because we had the Best Places to Work award like 4 years in a row, and when they came to interview us and they said, you know, how do you get this? How do you get all these people motivated to give you this Best Places to Work award? And, you know, they asked the common questions. Do y'all have, like, Massage Friday? No. Do y'all have Casual Work Week? No. Do you have in-house daycare or in-house hospital? No. Then what do? We teach people exactly where the company's going and how it's going to get there and what our core values are, and everybody understands exactly where they fit into that environment. And so because they know and because it's in their heart, they understand it, they bought into the system, they're all rowing the same way every day, and they know when they come to work that place is better off when they left than when they arrived that day. And that culture is what drove our company to be successful.
Oh, wonderful story. And Chris, Alex touched on something here right now. Unemployment, as we know, is at an all-time low. Everybody's working. Everybody has jobs. This is, you know, very, very low unemployment rate. How does we culture fit in? If I'm trying to attract and retain folks, does we culture help organizations to attract the folks, number one, and also retain them?
It's a great question, Pete. And, you know, attraction's a big part of what we culture is, because we don't keep our core values a secret. We actually advertise what our core values are. And then we, through social media, display our core values out in the open so that people can see it. So then when we're hiring, people not only see that we have a good job, they also see that we have a good culture. And then it actually attracts the people. People say, we state the core values as we're on social media. People see those core values, and the people who share them are not only attracted to our job, but they're attracted to our common core values. And then it's reinforced through retention, because if we truly practice them and those people share those core values, then it becomes the thing that makes them stay besides a paycheck.
And Chris was great. He was a great guest. His advice was spot on. Did a wonderful job. Aaron, what's next? What updates do we have coming up?
Sure. So we're always looking for people to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
The Instagram and the Twitter.
And you need to be following this upcoming week, because on Tuesday, if you ever wanted to know what goes behind the scenes of a recruiter, a day in the life with the recruiter, you can go ahead and check out Pete's IG stories. We have an awesome person taking over. Her name is Taylor McLennan. She's one of the best recruiters ever. And she's going to be on there on Tuesday. And you won't be able to see her if you're not following Pete.
How did you talk her into doing it? Because that lady, I mean, just to get her job done, she should clone herself anyway, because she's got so much going on. But she's gonna the whole day, what, carry her phone and take pictures, send videos,
exactly,
and show
what
a day in the life of a recruiter actually looks like.
Exactly. Huh? So follow Pete. It's at Pete the Job Guy on Instagram. The updates will also show up on Facebook. And if you're not following, you're going to miss out.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Follow us. Come on. Takes a second. Another thing. I know we have something coming. I got a little teaser, but, you know, we have a big event coming up. We're sponsoring some. We're proud to do it, giving back. We're not going to say what it is just yet. We're going to tell. But, you know, you're going to be running a big campaign here. Isn't that cool?
Yes. I'm so excited. We're working with awesome people, and they're my favorite kind of people.
And it's a wonderful cause.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah,
Awesome. Well, guys, you know, we're getting to that time right now, and I appreciate you spending your Sunday mornings with me, Pete the Job Guy, and the world-famous Aaron Mills.
Mm-hmm.
Every week we try to give you good career advice, and I swear I love our guests. We have some fantastic guests, and they come in and they share their career advice and tips and all the wonderful stuff, and we're glad that they did it, and I'm glad you joined us on this Best Of. Remember, you can always follow us at, you can reach out to me, Pete at PeteTheJobGuy.com. Reach me at SNI Companies here in Jacksonville, 904-713-2550. This is Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy, and I want to make sure all you hard workers finish your Sunday big and strong, and have a wonderful week.